Kia ora, hello, and welcome to Bod Almighty, the practical how-to podcast helping you feel better about your body, have a peaceful relationship with food, and go out into the world with confidence. Everywhere we turn these days, someone is telling us to love your body. But how?
Well, by listening to this podcast is how.
That's right. We are your hosts, Hannah Tunnicliffe
and Michelle Sokolich. Without further ado, let's get started.
Millie Thomas is a certified eating disorder recovery coach who battled anorexia nervosa for 15 years and very nearly lost her life to the illness. She was given up on by her treatment team and told to consider palliative care options. Her miraculous recovery was a catalyst for a complete career change. She left her hometown of Auckland, New Zealand and moved to her happy place, the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, where Millie became determined to use her lived experience to help bring eating disorders out of the shadows and into the light. Millie dedicates her time to eating disorder advocacy and eating disorder recovery coaching. She helps clients around the world to gain freedom from their eating disorders and reclaim their lives. Millie also works with Sunshine Coast-based charity EndEd, where she has been involved in numerous projects, including the establishment of Australia's first residential eating disorders facility, Wandi Nerida, and the podcast End Eating Disorders by Casco Media. In 2020, she also launched her private practice, Healed. Millie believes that no matter how long or how hard someone's journey with an eating disorder has been, full recovery is always possible. She is living proof of that. Thank you so much for being with us, Millie.
It's my absolute pleasure. I'm really looking forward to talking to you guys today.
Me too. And today we're going to be talking about how to deal when your kid's eating gets weird. So first off, Millie, can you tell us what is an eating disorder recovery coach?
Okay, so an eating disorder recovery coach came about. Carolyn Costin is one of the leading eating disorder experts worldwide, and she set up the very first residential eating disorders facilities in America. And they were the first in the world to do residential eating disorder care. And she was also the very first person to employ lived experience therapists. So therapists that had themselves walked that eating disorder journey. And what she noticed was that the clients in residential care that had the lived experience therapists had higher recovery rates. And so when she eventually sold the Montanito clinics, she decided to set up the Carolyn Costin Institute, where she trained certified eating disorder recovery coaches. And you can be a recovery coach and not have lived experience, but a lot of the recovery coaches do have lived experience, like I do. And the premise of a coach is that it's all very well to go into residential care and have that wraparound support all the time. But then when you step back out into the community, it can be really, really difficult to maintain that level of recovery because your eating disorder starts to creep back in. There can be, you know, a number of different triggers. So an eating disorder recovery coach walks alongside that person on their journey and helps them. So I do a lot of things that I work within a multidisciplinary team context. So most of my clients would have a GP, a dietitian, a psychologist, and so on. And then I come in as the coach. And so I work with that team to achieve the goals that they've set for my clients. But because I operate outside of office hours. I mean, we know eating disorders don't just operate 9 to 5. So I'm available for my clients outside of those hours. And I do things that other therapists can't do. So for just because it's not possible with their workload and it's not how they work for in terms of boundaries. So I will go grocery shopping with clients. I do wardrobe clear outs with them when they've gone up several sizes and we need to do a full wardrobe refresh. Help them with cooking. I've got clients who send me through every meal and every snack that they're having for accountability. I have got clients when they're having, you know, bad body image days, they reach out to me and I can help them through. It's very much being able to be there in the moment and help my clients to work through things rather than there be all these things that happen across the course of a week and then having to wait till Wednesday at 3 o'clock when they see their psychologist. Because what we know is that at that point in time, the moment's sort of gone, the emotions aren't as heightened, and we're probably not going to be able to kind of get to sort of that root cause or where this is all stemming from. So I love doing coaching because you really, really see the results. And I've got a lot of clients who've worked with me who've tried many, many things over the years. And then it's been coaching that's been the thing that's really helped them. Often they've got to what we call pseudo recovery, where they might be weight restored, but they've still got a lot of the thoughts and behaviors, and you know, they're living a life, but it's more of an existence, and they're still very trapped in a lot of the eating disorder stuff. And so being able to have a coach with them has helped them to achieve that next level of absolute full recovery. So it's really, really wonderful to see.
Have you noticed anything different with your clients or your practice since the pandemic's begun?
Absolutely. Look, unfortunately, the pandemic has been really, really, I mean, it's been difficult for all of us, but it's taken a real toll on people who had existing mental health issues, and not only for people who already had eating disorders, it's been difficult, but it's also meant that people have developed eating disorders that didn't have them before. So there are a number of different factors for that, but, you know, we know that being isolated, eating disorders thrive in isolation. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so open and talking about eating disorders and bringing them into the light, because the more that we talk about things and the more that we share and are open and honest, the less strength or power that the eating disorder has over people. So we know that, you know, we've had various different lockdowns, you know, no matter where you've been living in the world, there's been forms of needing to be isolated for safety purposes. And that's been very, very difficult. People with eating disorders, they aren't able to see their clinicians in person. For some people, seeing their dietitian or GP weekly, that's the only contact they have with the outside world, because they're too scared to, you know, might have anxiety, social anxiety and things like that. And so when that's taken away, and it's either they're not, those services are no longer available, or they're just via telehealth, that has a huge, huge impact. Even pre-COVID, what we know is that eating disorder rates worldwide had more than doubled over the last 18 years. And what we're seeing is that younger and younger individuals are developing eating disorders. And it's absolutely frightening. And you know, people cannot believe that I've got parents of 7-year-olds coming to me saying that they're starting to talk about thigh gaps and why don't they have a thigh gap. But I sort of say, why can't you believe it? Look at the society that we are living in, the diet culture saturated, you know, society that is driven by this fear, you know, that this the public health messaging has around people being overweight. Look at what happened on social media when we went into these lockdowns, and, you know, talk about COVID kilos and right, this is the time to focus on workouts and things like that. That was an absolute nightmare for my clients. Absolute nightmare, because everywhere you turned, whether it's on the TV, the radio, or on social media, everyone's focus shifted to that. Right, well, if we're all locked down, like, let's at least, you know, make sure that we come out of this with, you know, toned bodies. And it's like, we're in the middle of a global pandemic, and our major concern is whether we're going to gain weight, because we're, you know, and so that for me really epitomized the level of toxicity that we are in terms of this body focused diet culture at the moment. And what we need to remember, that these young people, just they soak up everything around them and what we're talking about. And you might not think that, you know, saying, oh, I'm not going to have that because I've, you know, I've eaten too much sugar, or I'm trying to be good today, so I won't have this, and this labeling of foods as good or bad. And I mean, food doesn't have a moral value. We're not inherently good or bad for, you know, eating a particular type of food, or the way that we even casually might comment on someone's body, or someone walking down the street, or she shouldn't be wearing a skirt like that. Just those comments that come out of people's mouths just without them thinking about it. Subconsciously, our children are picking up those messages subliminally, and they're internalizing that and going, okay, well, so that's obviously not, you know, right or attractive or accepted to have legs that look like this, or, you know, that's being praised. And I feel really sad that sort of innocence of childhood, where it should be this carefree time where you don't really have any, you know, body image isn't a massive thing. It's really sad.
It certainly is. And I think with the pandemic, I know for a lot of parents, you know, they themselves have been anxious, their children have been anxious. And I wonder if you can talk to how eating disorders and anxiety are often interconnected for parents who are noticing that their kids are much more anxious, that, that you know, they're starting to understand, hey, I can't control the world. The world is out of my control and things are unpredictable.
Absolutely. So definitely anxiety and eating disorders have massive, massive correlation. So it's obviously eating disorders are about a lot more than control, but they are a way that when our worlds feel out of control, we can turn to something like, you know, food or exercise to feel in control. And so whether it's anxiety around the pandemic or not being able to see family or not going to school, not being able to see friends, or and also the uncertainty of not knowing when life will go back to normal, then often you see changes in exercise and eating, but also anxiety where school is concerned, in terms of, like, I've got a few clients who've just gone back to school here in Australia last week, and the changes in them and the way that their eating disorder has ramped up because of when they've gone back to school immediately, there's been talk about tests and exams and things like that, and that anxiety around achievement and wanting to do the best they possibly can, and are they going to fail, and that just ramps up, and then it manifests in them starting to restrict again. Or for my clients who struggle with bulimia and binge eating, you know, binging or purging. And so it's really, really important that you, if you can, get your children to see someone around their anxiety, so they've got what I call a tool belt, you know, a tool belt of skills that they can use to help with their anxiety. I've always talked to my clients about their recovery tool belt and which tool are we going to use to help us with this particular situation. And I think that can be really, really valuable. I think the most important thing with that is to find a therapist that your loved one really connects well with. So there's a fantastic therapeutic connection going on. And don't be, I know therapists at the moment getting into it's thin on the ground because everyone's so overloaded post-COVID with this mental health crisis. But definitely make sure that your loved one is really connecting and getting something out of those sessions. And also just helping them to, like, letting them know that you're there as a really safe space, a non-judgmental safe space where they can talk, they can come to you, they can confide in you, and that you're going to love them unconditionally and help them in any way that you can, so that they're not internalizing it and keeping it all inside. One of the things that my parents and I did in my recovery, and which can be definitely helpful, even if, as we're just talking about anxiety here, if a person doesn't have an eating disorder, is getting into the habit of writing letters. So mum would often write a letter to me, and so we weren't having, you know, a screaming match over something. She would write a letter and get her sort of point across, and give me an opportunity to maybe write back to her and explain how exactly I was feeling and why. And I think that can sometimes be a really helpful tool, so that you're sort of preserving that relationship.
Yeah, that's a really great tip. And so, pulling it back a little bit, like, if you are worried about your child and not sure whether they, you know, you feel like they may be exercising too much or not eating enough, how do you know, what are the signs that you should look for to know that it really is a problem, or, you know, whether it's, yeah, I don't know, something else?
Any changes to behavior around food or exercise, I think, need to be taken really seriously, because early intervention is key where eating disorders are concerned. And what we know is that with eating disorders, the genes load the gun and the environment pulls the trigger. So someone can be genetically predisposed to having an eating disorder. for me, had all the personality characteristics that predispose someone to having anorexia, type A, high achiever, perfectionist, OCD. And then, you know, the environment, the private all girls school was what pulled the trigger for me. And so we need to be really mindful that these things can all be lying sort of latent, and it can be one little thing that starts to trigger off. And if we're to just sort of go, oh, it's probably not an issue, I just think you need to be really, really onto it. And don't make a big thing of it, but just clock that, okay, we've noticed that there's an increase in this, rather than thinking, oh, that's great, they want to do more exercise and fit and healthy. It's like, okay, well, that's definitely a change. Let's just be mindful. How are they talking about that? You know, I recently had a young boy who ended up with anorexia, and he'd been told by his rugby coach that, you know, he really needed to stay in the same, I think it's the weight grades or stuff to make a certain team, and that was it for him. You know, like, and so we started doing running, and his parents just thought, well, this is great. He's getting more into his fitness. He's focused. He's, you know, eating well.
A rapid change you're looking for, right? Like an unusual, like enough that you go, you know, not like, oh, they're just, you know, they're enjoying moving their body, or, you know what I mean? Like, is it sort of more sudden than that?
It doesn't have to be. And I think this is where it's hard. It's hard really as parents to, I think it comes down to you knowing your child really well and being able to just go, hang on, this really isn't quite normal.
Do you feel, Millie, that there's any risk in you know, asking your child or looking for support? I mean, if in doubt, would you not just say to try and bring it up or get support? I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of somebody developing an eating disorder from having it mentioned. You know, I think, do you think it's worthwhile, even if it isn't an issue, to actually raise it and be sure?
Absolutely. I probably wouldn't, maybe if the loved one was a teenager, then maybe, you know, using the terminology eating disorder would be appropriate and exploring that. If they were younger than that, I probably wouldn't use that eating disorder word, in case that then does make them think, oh, well, I might go and, what's an eating disorder? And then they go and sort of have a little bit of a research on that. I mean, we now know the online world can be very dangerous place. So I would be expressing concern and just, look, you know, I've been noticing that this is happening. Is there is there any underlying reason? You know, are you a little bit more stressed at the moment, or are you just enjoying doing? So just gently exploring it with them, definitely not coming at it so that they feel like they're being attacked in any way, or sort of, so just really being on their level with it. Or, you know, I've noticed that you've been eating a lot more salad recently and haven't been really having the sweet potato chips that I've been making. You used to really like those.
So being curious about it, yeah.
Yeah, is there something else that I could make you, you know, would you prefer me to, you know, make some couscous? Or just so that they're not picking up any dangerous ideas. But I also think, like you said, Hannah, I don't think you can ever be too careful. Look, I certainly, obviously, it's a bit different for me, because having had an eating disorder myself, I'm going to be probably hyper-vigilant with that sort of thing. But, you know, I've got lots of friends with young children at the moment, and it certainly, if they were, you know, been asking my advice around that, that would definitely be what I would say. You can never be too careful. And it's just about how you approach it, just in that really gentle, gentle way, where you're on their level and you're exploring it with them, and you come at it, you know, with an angle of curiosity.
And then what do you do if you think, hang on, there's something going on here, this isn't quite right, or the child says, no, I can't have couscous, mum, because it's a carbohydrate, or, you know, it'll make me fat, or something like that? Where do you think parents should go from that point?
Okay, so then I would obviously explore that more and say, where did you hear that? Who's, you know, where's that come from? And explaining to them, obviously, that's not the case. You obviously would, it would be good to get them engaged with a GP, if if you're not already, it can be really helpful to talk to a dietitian, because a dietitian can explain from a different angle about, you know, about food and the reasons why we need certain types of food and things like that. And it might be that you'll need a couple of sessions in order to just set that young person's mind straight on, oh, okay, so obviously so-and-so on the playground might have said something about, oh, I don't eat carbs because, whereas, and then they're not wanting to listen to their parent because, oh, it's just mum being mum. Whereas if you're going to a dietitian, a really a great dietitian, we've got some fabulous ones in New Zealand, that can actually just sit down and calmly go, okay, so let's have a look. And our bodies need this because you love to do, you know, X, Y, Z. So we've got to make sure that you're getting enough of this. And the reason that we need all of these things is, you know, because of this X, Y, Z. And so I think that would be really fabulous. If you really do think that, you know, there's this underlying, you know, underlying issues that are causing this change, you know, from a psychological perspective, then obviously looking at getting a psychologist or a therapist involved can be good too.
That's great advice. That's really good advice. And what about, I guess, an environment in the home that are there things that you can change in your own home that might have a positive impact on a child that's having anxiety around food, or their food or exercise behaviors are changing?
Absolutely. So as I said before, absolutely key that we're not talking about, we're not labeling food. So we're not saying food's good, food's bad. We're not talking about ourselves as being, oh, I had a cheat day today, or I've been really good, I haven't eaten this, or it's okay that I have this because last week I, you know, all these constant trade-offs that we can often hear people talking about. Food is just food. And so talking about food in ways of, like, obviously we want to encourage eating a wide variety of nourishing foods, right? And of course there needs to be balance and moderation, but we need to be mindful about the way that we talk about that, rather than sugar's bad, we don't, because then, you know, I had a case where then someone had said that how much sugar was in fruit, and so then that child decided it was absolutely no way they were ever going to touch fruit again because they've been told that sugar's bad and sugar will make you fat. And then this fear around fat. And so you just never know where it's going to go. So focusing on other elements of food. So how many colors have we got on our plate? Let's see how many colors we can get on our plate. Talking about carbohydrates in terms of the amount of energy that they're going to give you to play on the playground. Those sorts of things. And, you know, broccoli is good for this. And so making food fun, getting them involved in the kitchen. What shall we make for dinner? Let's say we've got to have something with some carbs, some protein, and some veggies. Now, what could we make? And just so that there is, it's not about there being any restrictions or limit. It doesn't feel like there's any restrictions or limitations, but we're mindful about balance. So, and also they're not being things that are just completely out of bounds. I think that's really important, so that, because if you're going to say, nope, you absolutely can't have that, you can be sure that the next time that your child goes to somebody's house, they see that in the pantry, you know, they're going to go in there and, you know,
yes,
on the pack, you know, if you never let them have biscuits, and then they go and have, you know, I remember something that my mum used to do. We were allowed at afternoon tea, or I can't remember when it was, but it was always like one plain and one fancy biscuit. You know, we had the sampler box, and it was like, oh, we get to pick a fancy and a plain, you know, so whether it was like a milk arrowroot and a cameo cream.
Oh, I love a cameo cream.
So just I guess being just mindful about the language that you use.
And also I was just going to say, you know, for any parents listening to this thinking, oh my God, oh, I've totally said that. Oh no, you know, like,
I've messed up.
Yeah, I've ruined them. Yeah, I think it's never too late to you know, just start changing some of that language and that behaviour around food, and it will still be of a big benefit.
Absolutely, it's never too late. And I think we've all said things that we sort of go, oops, probably wasn't quite the right quite the right thing to say, but I think it's overall recognizing that, okay, well, probably do need to change some of this stuff, and that's okay. Hasn't been ideal up until now, but I'm going to make a change. And it's never too late. And same with passing comments about people's bodies. I mean, no one really has the right to judge anyone on their body size, and make comments on people's bodies. And it's really important that you also aren't seen to be standing in front of the mirror and
judging your own.
About your bodies. And so I think one of the most valuable things to do there is to really take the focus on how our bodies look, to being grateful for what our bodies can do for us. So why are we grateful for our arms? What do our arms allow us to do? They allow us to hug people. They allow us to play on the monkey bars. What are we grateful for our tummies? Well, our tummies allow us to digest food. They allow us to be able to sit up straight. What am I grateful for our legs? You know, and I know that might sound really silly, but it takes that focus off. Oh, well, why are her legs bigger than mine? Which can sometimes happen in the playground, like, oh, you've got much bigger legs than me. So it's like, okay, well, everybody's really unique and different, and that's the beauty of being human. And we're all so lucky to have these parts of our body that we can do things with. So just shifting the focus, and that's a big part of what I do with my neurolinguistic programming side of my coaching, is really just shifting those perspectives, changing how we talk about things, how we think about things, and coming back to that uniqueness of our bodies and how special that is so important. I love Carolyn uses an expression saying that our bodies are our earth suits. And they're our earth suits, and we're here to enjoy life in them, and we're very lucky to have them. And so I think taking that focus back is really good. And in terms of the exercise component in the home, if we're talking about like creating a really sort of a healthy environment around that, I think it's just, again, all about balance. And so talking about definitely do not be showing them freaking Apple watches and look how many steps we've done, and the amount of parents that are doing that at the moment, it just drives me to despair. And look, I've closed my ring. Oh, I need to walk around here a little bit longer so that I can, that is teaching our younger generation that this is about somehow hitting a certain number, targeting how many calories have I burnt. And we've got kids at primary school going, oh, I better, running up the stairs and, oh God, I bet we burn like 300 calories doing that. Things like that, where they've obviously heard adults talking like that. And so it's about, let's do fun, moving our bodies for fun. Let's go down to the beach and build sandcastles, or let's have a relay race, or let's, whatever it is, make it about nature, being fun with friends, so that it doesn't become this sort of chore.
I love the idea in both cases you've mentioned introducing play and joy back into into moving your body and feeding your body, because we talk sometimes about, and you mentioned calories, so we talk about food as fuel, but food is not just fuel, and exercise is not just burning calories. It is about, it's part of the human experience, and we celebrate with food and we dance, and move our bodies to celebrate, weddings or whatever. And so it's reclaiming the joy and celebration. And I also loved in there talking about, letting go of the measurements, like how many steps is enough steps for the day, or, how many fancy biscuits are you allowed? Like, just removing the measurements
and listening
and
to
introducing the joy, for me, I think are two really key outtakes from what you've just said.
Oh, well, it was one of the biggest, I was heavily addicted to exercise and my eating disorder. It was one of the biggest things. I had to take it out of my life completely for a while. And then when reintroducing it, it was every single time that I went to engage in an activity, am I doing this because I feel like I have to, or am I doing it because I feel like I want to? Is this bringing me joy? Mm-hmm. And I think if we can help our younger generation to have that ingrained in them from the beginning. Especially, I think it's important for children who do competitive sport. I think that's really, really important that we're mindful around the language that their coaches are using, and that it's not, especially with what one of our ambassadors for the charity, Emily Seabom, who's an Olympic swimmer, and it was a really toxic environment for her. You know, the body checks on the side of the pool, you know, being weighed, all of that. And she grew up, you know, with swimming. And you think about it, you know, always in your togs, be comparing yourself to the other girls in the swim teams. And same for boys, whether it's whatever sport that they're engaging in as well. It can be really, really a toxic environment when there are when there is that focus on the different grades and they're based on the weights.
Can I, Millie, ask you about something that you had mentioned to me, bigorexia, something I hadn't heard of before, and that seems like it may be becoming more common. Can you tell me what bigorexia is and how we might notice it in our children?
Yes, so bigorexia is becoming more common amongst men, and I guess it could be for women as well that are in the bodybuilding sector, but primarily we hear about it amongst men. So there is this focus on being bigger is better and bulking up, and the use of artificial substances in order to make that happen. And what we're seeing is a lot of younger boys. There was an article in The Guardian recently around this, spending hours a day, you know, in gyms, doing really heavy weights, bulking up on protein shakes and only eating certain foods because they've been told that that's the, you know, what they should do to be lean and big. And it's so toxic, so unhealthy, and it's quite frightening. So that is you know, bigorexia basically. And I think again, it's looking for changes in behavior. If, you know, your son suddenly starts spending hours in a gym and they never used to, or being obsessed with talking about, oh, look up at my muscles are getting, look at my muscles, they're so big, then that would be, you know, sort of alarm bells. And again, changes in, you know, having, you know, multiple protein shakes and that sort of thing would be what I would look out for in that respect. And this is the thing, like diversity in what we see on the runways, in magazines, on TV,
it's crucial.
On social media, it's crucial. Yeah, diversity in terms of body shapes, in terms of skin colors, in terms of age. We need to keep encouraging diversity. It's so, so important. I often get clients to do social media cleanses so that we can make sure that what they're viewing is, you know,
diverse.
Yeah, and then it is diverse, and fill your feed with, but also fill your feed with things other than bodies and food. Yes. Exercise. Like, there's more to life. And that's one of my biggest things is, like, my feed is full of, you know, beautiful gardens around the world, places I want to travel to. I love quotes.
It's amazing how many of our guests say this, or just the same message, like diversity, just so important and so crucial.
And remembering how visual we are as humans, like visual images really impact us. We are so programmed to be impacted by things that we see.
Oh, Millie, that's so amazing. Like, you've given us so much incredible advice there. I would love to know, where can people find you if they want to know more about what you do?
Absolutely. So they can find me on Instagram. So at either MillieTNZ, MillieTNZ, or at Healed Recovery Coach. And I'm sure you guys will pop these in the show notes.
Absolutely,
and then my website is www.healed.net.au. And you can email me directly at millie@healed.net.au. Would love to hear from anyone that needs help or advice. I run Zoom groups. I used to fly over to New Zealand pre-Omicron, or pre-COVID in general.
Yeah.
And run groups in person with my dear friend Genevieve from Voices of Hope. However, because it hasn't been able to happen, we still run them every fortnight, but we do it via Zoom. So anybody who's interested in joining those groups, more than welcome. And any parents who are wanting further resources for eating disorders, I have recommended reading lists. And also the podcast series, End Eating Disorders, is an absolutely fabulous resource. Tap into it. Got a full 2 seasons up there and about to start recording season 3.
Amazing. Thank you.
Love it.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
You have been listening to Bod Almighty,
the podcast that gives you practical how-to steps towards body acceptance and confidence.
You can find us on Instagram at Bod Almighty Podcast.
Please do get in touch to let us know if you have any questions or suggestions. We love to hear from you.
From both of us, thank you and goodbye.